Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Ross Kemp. Over the last 18 years, I've made some 90-odd documentaries predominantly in hostile environments, from Afghanistan to Syria, from El Salvador to the Congo. And it's fair to say that during that time, I found myself in a few interesting situations. I've been shot at, tear gassed, had knives pulled on me, and spears thrown at me. But in all those years, what's impressed me the most is the resilience of the human spirit. Our ability, no matter where we're from, to overcome and make it through to the other side. So, in my new series, The Kemp Cast, I'll be talking to some incredible individuals who all have engaging stories to tell and have themselves overcome some extremely tough moments in their lives. Right now, we are living in unprecedented times, and we should be doing all we can together to get through this as safely as possible. I hope that if you subscribe to the Kempcast and hear how my guests overcame their toughest moments, it may help you overcome yours, whether you're going through one right now or you're faced with one in the future. Joining me today is Linda Calvi, nicknamed the Black Widow. She was the leader of an armed gang during the 1980s and has since served 18 years behind bars, making her one of Britain's longest-serving female prisoners. I really enjoyed spending time with Linda, and I hope you enjoy listening to her. Just tell me, what does a red Rolls Royce mean to you?
A red Rolls Royce? When I was a little girl, I was about 10, and I grew up in the East End. My dad had an old van, he was a blacksmith, and I think there was hardly any cars around at that time. And I went out with my mum and dad one day, we went over to visit my aunt. And on the way back, we stopped at the lights, and this beautiful red car pulled up, and I looked, and I thought, it was the most magical sight I'd ever seen, this red
any
car.
Any idea what year this was?
I was 10, 10 or 11, so quite a long while ago.
Yeah, okay.
So I looked and I went, and there was a man, and he was smoking a cigar, so it must have stunk in that car. But at that time, I never...
People smoked?
No, but I didn't even think, oh, I bet that stinks in there. But I looked, and he had this cigar, and there was a lady sitting next to him with a fur coat on. And I went, one day I'm going to have a red car like that. And I'm going to have a fur coat. And my dad said, well, I hope you do, darling. That's a roller. And I said, a roller? And he went, a Rolls Royce, the best car in the world. If you can have one of them, then you'll be a rich lady. And that was when I decided one day I will have my red Rolls Royce.
And you did actually get one, didn't you? Well, I did via George.
Prior to that, just before I got arrested, Brian took me to see a red Rolls Royce, and it was up for sale privately, and he said, I'm going to buy you that. And I went, oh, my red Rolls Royce, because he knew the story.
Yeah.
But we all got arrested, so I never got it.
That's happened quite a few times to you, but let's go back to the early days. So you grew up in the East End of London. As you said, your dad made hooks.
Dockers hooks.
Dockers hooks, right? legit business. Your mum was a market trader. Was it Roman Road? Something like that.
Roman Road.
So you couldn't get really more East End.
No.
Could you really?
I had
You're born in Ilford?
I was born in Ilford, but we moved to the East End when I was four.
Right.
So really I grew up in the, I'm not a Cockney as a true Cockney.
Bow Bells, et cetera.
Yeah, but I feel a Cockney because I've grew up there for the rest of my life, really.
But what I'm saying is you weren't born into criminality, were you?
No,
you weren't from a family of faces, as they say.
No, I grew up with a normal mum and dad.
And a lot of other brothers and sisters. How many?
Yes, three brothers and five sisters.
So one and nine.
Yeah, I did.
What was it like?
It was great. It was really, really great. There was four bedrooms. Obviously, my mum and dad had one. My two brothers, the elder brothers, had a room. I had a bedroom with my second sister. And all the rest were all in one room. I think it was like a bit Victorian where there was all these beds top to tail. But we loved it. And my mum and dad were the people that if anyone said, can they stay? Oh, yeah, make room, find them a cover, give them a pillar. And there were so many people, all the waifs and strays, knew they could come and stay in our house.
And as you say, I've read your book and I loved it for lots of reasons. Slightly worried me in places. but you really do describe another time in the East End. I mean, most of it was absolutely smashed during the Blitz. And most people who live there now live in one of our really good, trendy flats over in Hackney.
We have
no idea what that place like. No. My mum used to come into my bedroom when I was a kid and she says, this bedroom looks like a bomb site. But that was what bomb site meant, an area that was devastated by TNT that was dropped by the Luftwaffe during the Second World War, right?
When we moved into back into Stepney, we moved into a new masonette. It was a council estate, but it was a new estate. But everything around us was bomb sites.
It was rubble.
It was all rubble, old houses that had been bombed. And all the kids, it was like, I'll go and play on the bomb site. And I mean, I think my grandchildren, when I've said it to them, have gone, a bomb site? Didn't Nanny and Granddad want you to live? We went, no, but it was everybody played on a bomb site. And they'd come home and find all these little bits and bobs and bring them home. And it was, I suppose, there were dangerous places.
There were lots of unexploded ordnance around,
but we all loved it. And everybody enjoyed it. It was good.
So how did you first come into contact with the criminal underworld of the East End? Were you seduced by it? I mean, look, historically, people like Robin Hood for a certain reason. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
People have always liked Dick Turpin.
Yeah.
Historically, we like villains.
Yeah.
You know,
we like
gangsters Humphrey Bogart.
They actually are a different breed. And that is true. I don't know what. There's something in the villain's mind that's different to other people. And it is.
Is it because they break the rules? Because
maybe,
they don't care? Because they don't give a shit, my language.
A lot of criminals are really intelligent.
Oh, undoubtedly.
Could probably run the country better than the lot we got out there.
I often say, having spent some time in prisons all around the world, that if you put the intelligence that is in those prisons that they use for deviant means, if you put them to legit means, they'd be the richest people in the country.
They would. They really, really would. And I think if Ron hadn't have been nutty, they would have been very rich people because Reg was very, very clever.
Mm.
But Ron was his Achilles heel.
You're talking about Ron and Reggie Crane
now.
Let's go back to you, though.
Right.
So you've got a boy. I know because I read the book, but you've got a boyfriend. He's not taking you out locally. He's driving you off to the outskirts of Essex. And you didn't see the fact that he might possibly
be married. I met him when I was 16 and I was really naive.
Green at 16.
I mean, that was in the days when hardly anybody had cars. And
so going with a car was a big thing, right?
It was a big thing. But and I met him in Victoria Park.
Yeah, Vicky Park.
And I went out with him for 3 years. And my mum used to say to me, there's something not right with him. Why haven't you ever been round his house? I said, well, he don't get on with his dad and he don't this and he don't that. And my dad went,
And then one day she was at
a little boutique And people used to come in and pick clothes out. They might be, say, £6 for a dress. And people would go, can I leave a pound? And I'll pick it up like next week or the week after. And this lady came in with a pram with a baby. And she's picked a dress and she went, oh, can I leave a pound and I'll come in? Yeah, of course you can. What's your name? And she said her name. And my mum went, oh, same name as him, but never thought anything, wondering if it's a relative. And then this other lady walked in the shop and she started talking about him and said, oh, how's he doing? And he was a coalman and he was he had a scrapyard. So when they're talking about things, my mum thought, That's Linda's boyfriend, is her husband. So she's got the address.
And that was it.
Yeah, so when my dad's come in, my mum went, we're going somewhere when you get in. So I said, when your dad gets in, I went, are we? Yes. So when my dad come in, she went, right, where's this? Do you know where this is? And my dad went, yeah. She went, right, we're going round there. So we've got out and walked up. I'm thinking, what's she doing? And she knock, knock, knock on the door. And this woman answered the door. And my mum's got this dress. And she went, you can keep this. She went, is your husband there? Because he's been going out with my daughter. Well, I've gone. My dad went, oh, for God's sake.
So your mum hadn't told your dad either?
No. Everybody kept telling me there was something not right. Anyway, when it came.
He was quite a bully, wasn't he, as well?
Yeah.
That's something that was going to come back and haunt you later on.
Yeah, when
in your life,
she shouted up the stairs, there's a woman here, says you're going out with her daughter. He come down, he went, I'm off, walked out the door, disappeared.
Yeah.
And my mum went, right, I'm sorry I've told you that. Come on, let's go. And I think my dad just wanted to be somewhere else. He felt so embarrassed.
But he certainly got told off after that, didn't he?
Yes.
Because you met the biggest love of your life.
Yes, Mickey.
Tell me how you met him.
I met him, as we were saying about what criminals did I know. To know personally, the only criminal I'd actually met was my cousin Patsy's she'd just got married husband. And he was lovely, really great guy. But he used to, he was a creeper.
A creeper. What is a creeper?
Who goes in hotels and places and opens safes and does things like that. And I used to work at the time, there was a paint factory that was facing the Blind Beggars. It's not there now.
Very famous pub, yeah.
And came out of work and I'd had a big row with Terry. Didn't want to see him anymore. I said to him, you're married, don't want to know, blah, blah, blah. And banged into them. And Patsy said, oh, you look miserable. So I said, yeah, I've finished with Terry. He went, hallelujah, best news we've ever heard. He went, right, you're coming to a party Saturday night. So I said, am I? He went, yes. My pal's just come out of the big house. He went, he's done 8 years. He said, we've all got girlfriends or wives. He's on his own, so you can come and make the numbers.
Did that not worry you that he's just done 8 years?
It didn't even, to be quite honest, it sort of just went over my head. I went, oh, right, yeah, okay. And he said, will you come? I said, yeah. Well, then I thought about it. And for some reason, and I don't know why, because George was a very, really handsome guy. I went, oh, I don't think I'm going to go. I bet he's ugly. Criminals and ugly, because in films and that, you always see in the old days, all the criminals was like the ugly people. and the other side was all the good looking side. And I think I sort of just imagined.
But George wasn't like that. And you didn't know what Mickey looked like at all, did you?
No. But I just had this vision in my head that there was going to be this real ugly guy there.
Right.
And I started getting ready and I went, you know what, Mum, I'm not going to go. So she went, oh, don't come and watch the telly. So I've got all my hair done and my false eyelashes on.
And the famous mascara, the charcoal.
All done up, but I'd just not put my dress on. So I was all ready, but I've got a dressing gown. And my mum said, oh, come and watch the telly with me. And the phone rang and Pat went, where are you? So I said, oh, I'm not going to come. So she went, please come. She went, because George feels really embarrassed that he said, you're coming and you've not turned up. So I went, oh, I don't really want to go. And she said, well, you are coming. She went, because there's a cab on its way. It'll be outside your door in a minute.
And because Mickey's there on his own.
Yes.
Feeling so a bit like a gooseberry.
When I've got there, yeah, I've walked in. And I thought, oh, is that talking to George? He looks nice. Didn't click it was him. And then George looked and went like this and walked over and he went, Mickey, Linda, Linda, Mickey. And he walked away. And I went, oh, you're nice. And he went, so are you. I said, I wasn't going to come. I said, because I just imagined you was going to be this really ugly geezer. And he went, well, I thought, what 19-year-old girl's on her own on a Saturday night? She must be a right old dog. So that was our first conversation.
Dad, did you know at this point that he was going to be the love of your life?
Well, by the end of the night, he absolutely fascinated me because he was so charismatic. He was so different to anyone I'd ever met.
Describe him to me.
He was so flamboyant. And he always had a silk hanky here and another silk hanky that he used to have hanging out of his sleeve.
Now,
his
I wouldn't
shirt.
Say it to his face because he probably knocked me out very quickly, but but that sounds quite camp when you
my
describe it.
My dad used to go Lord Fauntleroy.
Really? Lord Fauntleroy?
Yeah.
But he used to go, did he not go and buy his own materials? He'd go and check out his own materials and then have the suits made.
Yeah. But he was really charismatic.
Did you fall in love with him?
I did.
And he fell in love with you?
Yes.
On what point did you work out that he was an armed robber?
Well, I knew because he said, I said to him.
He just slipped that in the first opening line.
I said, you've just come out of prison. He said, yeah. He said, I've just done an eight stretch. So I said, what for? So he said, oh, robbery, Marks and Spencer's security van, Stratford. He went, so if you want to go out with me, don't buy nothing in Marks and Spencer's. And I never ever did.
They'll be ringing and complaining.
I know.
But that's a big leap, isn't it? Because you've not really, apart from George, he's the only criminal that you know. Now, all of a sudden, you've fallen in love with an armed robber who, that's what he does. In those days, that's what people did.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. That was his job.
Did you think at that point it might end up being your job?
No, not in a million years.
But it did, though.
It did.
And you know, we were. If you read the book, you think that there was an armed robbery in London every other week. Now, we know that's not true, and that's the way books have to be written to get people interested in them. But how many? How many do you reckon, when you were with Mickey, how many armed robberies do you think he was
that he did? Yeah. Over the length of time I was with him, I suppose he probably did about 20.
That's a lot.
But it wasn't, I mean, every week. But the funny thing was, there was quite a few little gangs of armed robbers and they all knew each other. And they'd even say, like, I'm having a look at so-and-so. And Mickey might go, well, we was looking at that, but go on, you have that one. It was weird. It's so... People can't imagine what it was like.
But it was. That's why I think it's looked back in sort of through rose tinted glasses naturally because they were dangerous. I mean, look, you're going up and you're pointing an armed gun at a person, human being.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about that? Did it?
No, I didn't. When he used to go and do it, and in fact, on the day that he died, the night before, he was sitting at the kitchen table and he was emptying all the cartridges and tipping all the pellets out and putting cotton wool in and then just sealing them back up.
Yeah. You're taking out and making them non-lethal.
Yeah. So there was nothing in them other than a bit of fluff. Yeah. So I said, what are you doing that for? He said, well, it's December. It's the supermarket. It's the security van at the supermarket. There's women and children. There's no way I would have live ammunition. He said, so if it comes to it that I'm challenged, I can go bang and you'll get the noise and the effects.
But no one's going to get killed.
That's it. Nobody can get hurt.
If they are, it's not going to be half as bad as getting lead pellets in them.
No,
right?
It's just a bit
but
of
that's a genuine, that is absolutely 100% gen.
Yes. Yeah. And that is how I knew when he died and they said, oh, he faced the copper and said, it's me or you. Mm. He was as intelligent as anybody. And nobody would face somebody with a loaded gun when they've got nothing in theirs and go, it's me or you.
So he was shot dead by a member of the Sweeney.
Yes.
A DS Banks, was he a DS at the time?
Yeah, Michael Banks.
Yeah. How do you feel about that to this day?
Well, I think it's terrible. I know Mickey was doing what he was doing. And had he have been arrested and got 15 years, I'd go, that's fair.
Mm.
He was doing a robbery, he got caught, and that was the consequence. But he was shot through the back as he was running away.
Was that ever proved? The body went missing, didn't it?
The body went missing.
But these are very different times
to now. It was very different times. And the thing was, obviously, by the fact of where it was outside.
It was in South London.
And it was, there was a supermarket, so it was really busy. So there was hundreds of witnesses.
Yeah.
So most of the witnesses thought D.I. Banks was a crook because he actually was on his own. But there was a story put round afterwards that it was an undercover mission and there were more police there, but there wasn't. It was him. And he just shot Mickey through the back. But
was it ever proved?
Oh, it was proved that he was shot through the back. Right. Yeah.
And what was the grounds for shooting someone in the back?
Well, he said he was facing him when he fired.
But and he turned around very quickly.
Well, he must have been Superman. Had it have been a case of...
He had a loaded gun
and there was shots being fired and they went, your husband got shot. I'd have to go, I accept that.
Mm.
But I know the night before he went out and emptied his gun. So I wasn't going to accept what I was told the next day. And that was the beginning of my feud with the police.
Is that over now?
Yes. It has to be, otherwise it eats you up.
But this was now, this Mickey's death potentially, and he was, as I say, I'll go on about it because you talk about him continuously and consistently through the book about your, he was.
I mean, also, I have to say as well, he was locked out of the car.
No, we were going to get there. Tell me about it now, because as soon as he's virtually in the ground, somebody else materialises. You've already bumped into him,
yes,
and you're wary of him, and he is an alpha criminal.
Yes.
I'm not saying that Mickey was a B or a C.
I mean, this guy was top end. Yeah, he was.
And
he was the complete opposite of Mickey. The total opposite.
Mickey comes over, despite what he did for a living, as being a lovable rogue.
Everybody loved Mickey.
Right?
Everybody. All the publicans, all the ordinary people in the pubs used to love him.
Mm.
And he always used to say, oh, God, could you imagine going out and nobody remembered you was there? He used to go out and when we walked in.
Both him and Ronald Cook, would both be remembered in a pub, but for two very different reasons.
Yeah.
Were you scared of him when you first met him?
No, I wasn't at first. I wasn't because he wanted me, so he was playing
one character.
Yeah.
Do you think he did have split personality?
I think he did. I mean, he really was this utter sweet gentleman.
He kept low profile as well, unlike many of the chaps. Yes. He didn't want to wear it.
He drove an ordinary car.
Mm.
He didn't wear flash jewellery. He wore very, very conservative clothes.
Mm.
He was the complete opposite of what most of the gangsters, so for want of a better word.
But he was a hardened killer.
But he was
a killer.
He was really, I mean, all the ones that you'd look at and go, oh, he's tough. They were all terrified of Ron.
Because
they said, you can't row with Ron. He kills you. You can't just have a row and go.
Handshakes and goodbye.
Yeah.
No. It would be your end.
Yes.
I mean, you tell in the book that one day he just stopped someone in the street, said, go and have a look. I left my jacket in the back of the car.
It was another criminal, actually.
Cool.
And
I think this sums up Ron for me.
Yeah. he was, I won't say his name, obviously, but he was sitting outside having a drink. It was a sunny day, Saturday afternoon, having a couple of drinks with a few friends. And he said, he told me this himself. And he said, Ron pulled up and went to him, what are you doing? He went, having a drink with my friends. So he went, oh, I want to go somewhere. Do you want to come with me? He went, well, not really, Ron. I'm having a drink with my mates.
But difficult to turn Ron Cook down, though, isn't
but
it?
But he went, but I'm asking you, I've got something to do. Will you come with me? And he went, well, not really. He said, Ron, like, okay, here. So he went, okay, then. He said, do us a favour. He said, can you go and get my jacket out my out the boat for me and pass it through? Well, he said, how thick am I? It's a sunny, hot day. Why does he want me to pass his jacket out the boat?
Emma said that. It's Ron Cook asking you, isn't it?
Yeah. So he said, he went, yeah, okay, Ron. He said, as I opened the boat, there was a dead body in the boat. He said, I shut it. And he went, get in.
Off and, to bury a body.
Yeah. He said, I had to get in. He said, because if I didn't, I'd have been the next one in the boat. And that was Ron. I mean, Ron, another time, had a body in the boat when I was with him, and I never knew. And he
and you, and you ended up living with this man?
Yeah. But was it ever, was it ever based... You couldn't get away from him, that was the thing.
No, when you went on holiday, he turned up in the like two rooms down, didn't he, or something like that? You got away with the kids and your family, and someone goes,
I was away with my
that looks
and
like
dad.
Ron up there. No, that is Ron up there.
Yeah.
And he's two rooms away.
Yeah.
Were you not getting slight ding-dongs in your ear going?
And I went, what are you doing? He went, oh, he said, I didn't realise this was where you was. He said, I booked this up ages ago. And it was like,
again, Ron was married, wasn't he not?
Mm.
So he had a wife and a life. He was one of the most feared criminals in the East End.
Mm-hmm.
But he was also obsessed with you. Obsessed, yeah. I mean, yeah. Let's be clear.
Because he said to me, it was my fault Mickey died. Because the very first time he saw me, he knocked on the door on the Saturday night. And he was standing on the step, because he was a Keep Fit fanatic.
Mm.
He had a black tracksuit on and he was jogging on the spot. And I've opened the door and he went, is Mickey in? So I said, hang on, who is he? He said, oh, it's Ron. So I shouted out, Mickey, it's Ron. He went, I'm in the shower, tell him I'll get out. He went, tell him, don't worry, I'll come back tomorrow. And he said to me, I fell in love with you when you opened your door, so it's your fault that he's dead.
Now, you can tell us what he told you. So you're with Ron Cook now.
Mm.
You've got a house. He's there, he's not there.
Mm.
He gets drunk one night.
Yeah.
What happens?
And he tells me that he was intending to kill Mickey because, to him, going out with an associate's wife wasn't, you couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to get rid of Mickey. And he said, I'd decided I was going to kill him. And the opportunity came up the day of the robbery and I locked him out of the car.
So there they are. They've done the robbery. They're all racing back to the vehicle. And as Mickey gets to the door, locked.
And there was witnesses said that in the call.
They and he said, got in that vehicle, Dear Spanks probably wouldn't have been
no,
able to.
No, that's right. So he was locked
so
out.
So he told you. So you found out at this point that the man that you're now living with, having a relationship, was responsible ultimately for the death of your true love.
Yeah.
And he's putting it on you.
Yeah.
How'd you feel?
I was absolutely horrified.
Did you not could you not get away from him?
I couldn't. I couldn't get away from him.
Because of the fear that he wielded?
He said to me, you can never leave me. You've got too many family.
So, yeah, so tell me about... So you've got kids.
I mean, he knocked at my mother's once. My mum was babysitting, and luckily my dad wasn't in, or my brother's. My mum was babysitting, and she said, bang, bang, bang on the door. And she's opened the door and she said, that lunatic was standing there with two guns, one in each hand. She said, and I went, what do you want? I mean, my mum, bless her.
Proper old East End mum.
Yeah, what do you want? I want Peter Spelling, which was my brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was an argument over a whip in the pub.
15 quid.
15 quid. He'd picked the wrong whip up when they were going to another pub. So he decided that was an insult to him.
Do you not think that this might have a detrimental relationship with his so-called in-laws?
Exactly.
But he didn't think like that, did he?
No,
he saw that as a front. That was knocking away, yeah. chipping away. He also said that you know, did he not say something about you are my front window or you're my
shop window.
Shop window.
Yeah.
And that's why he
would buy me anything,
and
everything.
And he had the money to do so,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And that was sort of his way of controlling you as well, wasn't it?
Well, he said to me, I said to him, why do you keep buying me everything? You're my shop window. He said, I don't get dressed up. You do.
How did you feel when he got arrested?
Well, first of all, I thought, oh, thank God for that. But he was on remand for a year. And
for an armed robbery? Was it an armed robbery?
Yeah, Brinks Matt robbery.
Brinks Matt, one of the biggest in British history, right?
So he was on remand. So when I was visiting, he said to me, it's all sorted. He said, I'm going to be in here for a year. He said, but don't worry. He said, because paying the jury, I'm going to get a not guilty. So I went, all right. So
how did you feel at that moment? You went, oh, that's went, brilliant oh, news. Lovely. I'm so happy about that, Ron.
So he said, yeah, for me, for Kevin, he said, and for Scats, I'm going to do it for the three of us. Well, then Scats said, oh, don't worry, I'm already doing it. So he's paying the jury off, but you're on it, on my thing, Ron, for paying the jury off. Anyway, when it come to it, there was a photograph of Ron, so they couldn't come back with a not guilty on him.
He was pictured?
Yeah, so you can't then go back and go not guilty.
No, I paid the jury 10K each, but there's a picture of me doing a robbery.
Yeah, so yeah. Obviously he got guilty.
And how many did he get? How many years?
He got 16 years.
16 years?
Yeah.
Were you in the court? Was it?
No.
No, didn't go.
I wasn't there that day. But when I went and saw him, he said, of course, you will be waiting for me.
And then what did you say? Went, you said, yes, of course I will be.
Yeah, he said, because you've got a lovely looking boy.
He threatened Neil. Yeah, he threatened Neil, your son.
Yeah.
Basically,
he
with
said,
death.
Because you've got a lovely looking boy.
Was it death?
Boy. Yeah.
Was it,
it
killed,
yeah.
So if you weren't waiting for him in 16 yes. years' time, he was going to have Neil killed.
Yeah.
How could he expect you ever to love him? Was that not important to him? Do you think he didn't?
Oh, no. He wasn't about love. No, he believed that I did love him. He said...
Wait, so he could say that I'll kill your son
if
you're not waiting for me, but he still believed... Was he deluded? Or do you think he was seriously mentally ill?
I think he was mentally ill because he would do things...
Well, yeah. Well,
not to me.
He drove around
with
lots of dead bodies in the back of his car,
I mean,
for starters.
He'd do things... He'd have murders with somebody and then he'd look and go... I've let you off now. And then he go, blah, 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 blah. And he talked to them, they'd sort of go.
So people never knew where they stood with him?
No.
Yeah, people on edge all the time. Because he was on the edge all the time.
He was, I think, is it schizophrenic or what? Yeah. I don't know. But he totally had two totally different personalities.
But anyway, he gets put in prison.
Yes.
For the Brinks Matt, and he does, he gets 16 years. But he sends his best friend.
Who at the time I never liked.
Called
who
Brian.
Who never liked me.
Brian?
Brian.
Brian
yeah.
Round. So yeah. And Brian's kind of, in the classic movie sense, is basically, he's the boss's best mate, and he mustn't go anywhere near. This is Pulp Fiction. This is every other movie that you've ever seen. He's got to put himself as far away. He can't even look you in the eyes.
He said, oh, my pal's just come home, just finished at 15, which was Brian. He said, I'd like to introduce you. So
he's done a 15. I didn't know he did 15 years before that.
Yeah, yeah.
How old was he?
Brian.
At the time.
At the time, I think he was... About early 40s.
Not yet.
Yeah. So he'd got 15, but he'd done, I think, 10. And he said, right, you are going to look after her for me till I come home. He went, why me?
Well, he certainly did do that, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly did.
Oh, my God. So he must have known, it, and you must have known, that if Ron had found out about any relationship between you and Brian, that he would have killed you both. Would he not?
Well, Brian was the one person who wasn't frightened of him. And Brian said to me, don't worry, I'll deal with him.
Really?
I'll deal with him when it comes to it. But then Brian ended up getting 21 years.
Yeah, but let's get there. In between that time, you become an armed robber.
Yes.
Yeah, how did you... Sorry, just out of interest. That's one thing I don't often say to many nice ladies like me. In the meantime, you become an armed robber.
Yes, I did.
So you start moving with Brian. Your kids like Brian. Yeah?
Yeah.
Your daughter and your son.
Yeah.
They like him.
Oh,
your family like him.
Everybody liked Brian. Apart from the fact he wasn't flamboyant.
But bear in mind, he was also married as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So he lived two lives. That seemed to be a common recurring theme going through bits of your life. But people like him. He couldn't be more opposite than his best mate, Ron, who's now doing a very long stretch. Mm-hmm. But he's a blagger.
Yeah.
And you're used to being sitting over Mickey's shoulder, making the ham sandwiches and the tea and going, well, you've got to have talk about the ways out. Tell us how you do it.
Right.
Not as much detail as you wanted.
Right. I mean, when Mickey used to do it, we used to get the maps out and they'd go, right, they'd look at places and then they'd go, right, we're thinking of that. Right, what's the outs? Because he always said, you've got to do a robbery thinking you're going to get caught. Don't do it thinking you're not going to get caught because that way you've only got one out. But if you think I might get caught, you'll find 3-4 different ways that you can go. Well, if I can't go that way, I can go that way, or I can go through that way, or I can put a motorbike down here, or I can do whatever.
But it was more elaborate than that. I mean,
it was.
You used to wear wigs. Your mum had a store.
We had temporary bus stops.
You had stop signs. Yeah, tents. Didn't you? You had the old BT tents.
Yeah, we had everything. Yeah.
I mean, people go, when you're thinking about it now, you couldn't make that up, could you? It's movie stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and did it feel like that? Did it feel surreal? Did it feel like it wasn't really happening? Did it feel like
it
was a movie?
A
you were young, you're impressionable, you know, you're wearing fur coats, you're dripping in gems, you've got car keys given to you, you've got these charismatic, frightening, truly scary human beings. But at the same time, they're putting the fear of God into people every time they go to work because they're pulling out loaded weapons that could kill or maim.
Yeah.
Did you think about it?
Well, I think, and I know this sounds utterly ridiculous saying it, but this actually is real. When I got told Mickey was dead, I could hear somebody screaming and screaming and screaming, and somebody was going, slap her around the face, she's hysterical. And I was thinking, slap her around the face, she's hysterical. I didn't realise it was me. And I think the shock of hearing Mickey was dead was the last thing in the world I ever expected to hear, followed closely by, Lynn, we've got to go and identify the body. Because his brother couldn't do it. I had to do it. I was his wife. So from that initial shock, about 2 hours later, we're there to identify the body. And there's this man with a clipboard going, really sorry, blah, blah, blah. And it was sort of just going in one ear and out the other. And it was only when he went, he had no choice. Your husband faced him and said, it's me or him.
And you knew that.
And I know. And then I went, you've murdered him. And he went, and I just threw the board on the floor and said, you murdered him. You murdered my husband. You shot him through the back. No, no, no. I said, you've shot him through the back. He went, well, if you don't sign this paper, you can't take your husband. And his brother went, Lynn, sign the paper. I want my brother. And I said, no, I won't sign it. And it was only when we went outside and I said to him what had happened. And he went to me, I'm glad you didn't sign it.
But that happened to the love of your life, right?
Yes. But I believe...
But then you end up becoming an armed robber yourself.
Yes, but I
So you knew that the risk. And when you went out, you put on two coats to make sure that you look like a bloke.
Yes.
So to all intents and purposes, to an armed police officer coming in there, if
I
you were holding...
I could have been.
You held a loaded weapon, right?
Yeah.
How many times did you do armed robberies? A few.
But what
was it addictive? What was the rush like?
Oh God, it was like walking on air. It was such a buzz. It was like, oh wow, I can see why they all come back going,
Empty the money.
Yeah, tip the money out. It was some real...
And even then, so but, you knew you love of your life had been shot doing one of those robberies.
But if I can just go back
on.
As I say, I think something happened
in my brain.
And I know it sounds absolutely ridiculous, that I think those two incidents within those few hours,
so,
from he's dead, and I hear that, and I know that's not right.
Mm.
My brain, I think, went, I don't know, something in my brain changed. And it wasn't until I was actually arrested myself and the gun was held at me that all of a sudden, like it went like that when Mickey died, it went
back.
Like that. And I thought, oh, my God, this is terrible.
Mm. So you think there was a bit of element of anger, the element of anger inside you as well, because of the resentment that you felt for the way that Mickey had died, that also turned you into that sort of person?
Because I remember when he was in his coffin and I held his feet and I said to him, I won't let you die in vain. I will do what for our children, what you died doing. I'll carry on and I'll do it, which is such an alien thing for me to have said, but it seemed the most normal thing in the world to say.
And you're saying that switch that turned on
after Mickey's death. And it never switched off
until you had armed police pointing a gun at your head.
Yeah, which was a really traumatic thing as well. And I think, what happened? How have I done what I've done?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You have become virtually the alpha of a bunch of armed robbers.
I ended up being the boss.
Right. Organising.
Yeah.
Making sure everybody got home safely, divvying up the cash.
Yeah.
And then it all goes wrong.
Yes.
On one of them, it all goes wrong. You went to your brothers, is that right?
Yes, my younger brothers.
Was Brian with you?
Brian had gone down and Carl. It was a robbery that just the two of them were going down to. Right. I'd been down already and came back and said, you can go.
And all of a sudden.
And they went and that was it.
Doors are bashed in.
Yeah.
And there's a gun.
Yeah.
Aimed at your head.
Yeah.
Armed police.
Mm-hmm.
So you realise at that point. But how had the police found out about the armed robbery?
They had been watching because Brian's wife had got a private detective following him.
To see who he was being unfaithful or
with,
not.
Yeah. And he said, well, I don't know about that, but I've watched him do a robbery and I've informed the police. And that is it. And the police went, you were so good, we'd have never caught you. You were too good.
Really?
So I thought at least that was something.
But now you're looking at a custodial sentence,
yes,
right?
Yeah. So
is that a big move? So you were saying that switch got changed when the gun was,
yeah, it
was
did.
Put in your head, right?
Yeah, it clicked instantaneously, and I thought, oh my God, this is so terrible.
So the high life, the fun, yeah, the ride,
and
the buzz,
worst thing of all those things. On that day, my brother, who was totally innocent and didn't even know what was going on, was in bed. He was arrested, yeah, and he got 9 years.
9 years?
He didn't know.
How did he get 9 years?
Well, they took him in and they said they decided he was the banker.
So he was holding the money?
Yeah, he must have been the banker because they'd... And we said, why would we need a banker? Our money was all... We didn't steal new money. We only stole old money. You don't have to change old money up. Mm. You change new money up that's in serial numbered.
Mm.
But they said no, the police decided.
So your brother did 9 years?
He got 9 years. And he was totally innocent. And yet the first letter I got when I went away was from him.
So what sentence did you get that time?
7 years.
Did you serve 7?
I did 4.
Long time to be away from your kids though, right?
Yeah. And I said, I will never, ever do anything ever again to be away from my kids.
So at this time, how long did Brian get?
21 years.
21 years.
Yeah. What happened when they got, I mean, Carl and Brian were fantastic. And Brian said, look, don't charge her. Let her go. And we will hold
our hands. Men were gentlemen in them days, I guess.
And we'll hold our hands up to robberies that we've done. We'll clear your books. We'll make it good for you.
We'll take on responsibility.
So they said, okay, we'll let her have bail.
That was unheard of, probably.
Because when we went in and the magistrate said, obviously there's no bail applications. And they said, yes, Mr. Welford, my brother, and Mrs. Calvey are both asking for bail. And the magistrate said, I'm sure there's going to be strenuous objections from the flying squad. And they went, no, not at all. They can have bail, minimum money. And we got bail right till the actual trial. Mm. And Brian pleaded guilty to 21 armed robberies. And Carl pleaded guilty to 15 to help me.
To help you. And picking up from that, so... You go to prison, so you don't get to see your kids very often.
No.
Yeah. So you've got that playing on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Holloway, was it, for the first time?
Oh, this you're talking about the first time.
The first time you went to prison.
I went to Holloway.
Yeah. By this time, that switch that has now clicked off.
Yes.
What are you saying to yourself? If I get out of here, I'm never, ever...
I'm going to do anything again. In fact, on the year that I was on remand, I started a curtain business up with my sister and we were doing quite well. And I said, you know what, I'm quite enjoying being an honest person.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, we were really, really doing good. We called it Material Matters.
Mm.
And I was getting loads and loads of work coming in. And I thought, this is great. This will be my path.
But then you hear that Ron is getting out. Is that right? Ron's coming back.
Yes.
Ron's coming back into your life.
Yeah.
And you've also now met Danny. Is that right? Have you met Danny at this
Danny,
point?
I never knew Danny out of prison. I knew Danny. I know it sounds strange.
Right, go on.
Danny was on remand with Brian.
Right.
And that is how I met Danny. But I went and visited Danny, and while he was actually away, his son got killed in a road accident. And he ended up in a grave about 4 graves away from Mickey.
Isn't that?
Which is so weird. And then I visited him one day, and he said, I've got a home leave this weekend. So I said, oh, great, what are you doing? So he said, first thing, I'm going to the cemetery. Well, when he said that, I went, well, who's picking you up? And he said, nobody, I'm a big boy, I can go on the train. And I thought, you can't go on the train to go and find your son's grave. So I said to him, look, I'll pick you up, I'll take you. It's not a problem to me. So I did that. I picked him up, took him in the cemetery. Obviously, he was absolutely devastated. He just sobbed and fell down by the grave. And afterwards, whereas I was going to drop him straight to his mum's in Stratford, I said to him, look, do you want to come back to my house and refresh yourself? He went, yeah, I wouldn't mind. Took him back. At the time, my son was sitting. He said, oh, I've just got Full Metal Jacket off of the video man. You know, they come around the house.
Mm, in those days, they did, yeah.
Yeah, so Danny went, I didn't think that was out yet. He went, it's not, it's a bootleg. So he went, cool, well, what am I watching that? So I said, well, watch it with him and I'll cook you something to eat. So that is why he was in my house that day.
And that's why his fingerprints
And that's why his fingerprints was there.
Yeah.
So he watched the film, he had something to eat, and I took him to his mum's.
Yeah.
And I said to him, I can't take you back Monday, I'm picking Ron up. So he said, no, that's fine. He said, I'm going back. He said, I can go on the train. You've done me such a favour picking me up. So he said, oh, what do you do with Ron? I said, well, bring him back home. That's what he does. And have something to eat, whatever. He went, okay. Anyway, thank you. The next time I saw Danny was when I walked in my kitchen with Ron and my street door was kicked open. He come in. He had a hat pulled down and a jumper pulled up to here, so I just saw eyes, a big bloke. And he'd done an Irish accent and went, get down on, please. And I still didn't know it was Danny.
So he's got get down on, please, in an Irish accent.
Yeah. So I've looked like that, and Ron's gone, all calm. What's that, mate? Like that. It was like so surreal. And with that, he fired at him. And I thought he'd shot him in the chest because the jacket was filling up with blood. But he'd been shot in the arm. But where his arm went down, it was
leaking into
leaking
the jacket.
Across. And I just started screaming and bent down in the corner. And as I've looked around again, he's reached and pulled the roll top jumper down.
Yeah.
Looked at me, smiled and went, you'll be all right. And then went bang.
And killed him.
And that's when I saw it was Danny. And I looked and he went, you'll be all right. And he ran out.
You'll be all right?
Yeah.
No kids in the house? No one else?
Well, I didn't know if my son was there. Because the next door neighbour said, I heard Linda scream, oh no, Neil.
Yeah.
And she said, I thought, oh my God, something's happened to Neil. Because she heard the bang and thought, what's happened to Neil? And she went to court and said it wasn't a command. They went, no, she commanded him to kneel. And she said, no, it was a frightened mother's voice going, oh, no, Neil.
Mm.
But that's another thing. Anyway, I ran out. There was a police. I live facing a park. There was a young policeman walking through the park. So I've come out screaming. Young policeman's come over running. He come out and he went, it's 12:28. It's a murder. Within about 5 minutes, there were so many police cars there. And they took me in as what I was. I was a witness to it. Yes, I saw it was Danny when the second shot was fired, but I was no party to that. So I told them everything that happened, but I never named him. And they said, look, we can see the blood is all down your back. We're going to need your clothes to send away for forensics. They didn't put me in a white suit. They said, is there somebody that can bring you some clothes? So I said, my brother's wife is the same size. So they phoned my brother and said to him, can you bring some clothes for your sister? In the meantime, he went, yes, certainly. In the meantime, they said, we can do these tests on you.
Swab tests.
To
find out when you've got residue from explosives.
So they said, would you like us to do them? So I said, yes, please. Would you like a solicitor? I said, no, I don't need a solicitor. I never did it. Now, had I have said, yes, I do want a solicitor, they couldn't have hidden the tests, but they did. But I thought, well, I don't need a solicitor. I've not done this. So they said, right, they swabbed my face and hands and they put that down. And they said, have you got a clean hanky? So I said, no, I've only got tissues. And one of the policemen put his hand in his pocket and he went, And he held his hand out like that, and he had a hanky flat on his hand, and there was a blue initial, you know, those old-fashioned ones. Yeah,
put your name on it.
But I don't know what the initial was, but I could see the little blue.
Stitching.
Yeah. He said, "This isn't you, but she can use it. I haven't used it." And they went, "You won't get it back." I can remember the conversation perfectly. They went, he went, "No, she's welcome." So they said, "Hold this hanky." So blowing in this hanky. He went, "Okay." Went away, came back about 5 minutes before my brother arrived and said, "Really good you've had that. You're totally eliminated." So I said, "But I didn't do it. I know that anyway." They
said, "Would they think if you'd put the weapon?"
Well, exactly. But they said, "Right, you're totally eliminated." I'd done my statement. What happened? I never named him because I thought,
"Why would I?"
Well, no.
Also, this is a man that, see, the problem is you've been having an affair with his best mate. You've also, he's publicly humiliated you for years and years and years, and others around him and anybody that had anything to do with you. So it was well known by a lot of people that he was effectively a psychopath and a control freak. And a bully, sexual bully.
And Brian said to me afterwards, he said, when I told him, he went, "I'll get rid of him, Brian. I'll do it. I don't know how, but I will." And it just all fell in place for him. So about 3 days after I'd done my statement and I'd had these tests done, the head of the murder squad knocked on the door. "Why didn't you tell us you were Linda Calvey?" I said, "I did. I've signed the statement. You didn't tell us you was the Linda Calvey involved with Michael Banks." So I said, "What difference does that make? All the difference in the world, you're our suspect." So I said, "How can I be your suspect?"
And also, was it known, widely known, that Ron had locked the door on Mickey? Did people know that? Would the police have known that?
Well, it came out, there was witnesses who said he was locked out of the car.
So this again makes it more likely for you to be a murder suspect, doesn't it? There's a lot of evidence pointing against you.
So... Yeah, but Mickey was a different thing to mine, wasn't it?
No, but because Ron was responsible for
effectively,
removing the love of your life.
Yeah,
it makes you again. It puts more onus on you to be the person that would have wanted him dead, which you did want him dead by your own admins, but you're also admitting that you didn't do it.
And I certainly would not have wanted it in my own house.
No.
Certainly wouldn't want to be in my house and have somebody murdered. Certainly wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
But 4 days after, they said, "Oh, we're charging you with the murder." So I said, "What?" They went, "No, you killed him." I said, "But you've already... Did we? How did we do that then?" I said, "With your tests, what you did." "Don't know what you're talking about. Nobody else can remember. It was an oversight. We should have done it. Didn't."
Was this because of who you'd become and who you were associated with, and because of the armed robberies in the past?
Yeah, I think so. I think it just went right back to when Mickey died. And then they probably thought with the robberies, she got away with that. She only got 7 years. They'd done all that. They took all that for her. So when that happened, they probably thought, yeah, bingo.
Did you at that point think that you were going to get found guilty?
I never thought for 1 minute I was going to get found guilty. Not 1 minute. Even my QC, when the jury went out, opened his briefcase and went to me, spot the champagne. We'd be celebrating.
Did he?
Nobody at all. Even the staff who was with me. Because when you go for trial on a murder trial, you have the same two staff with you every day. If you go up for robbery or whatever, you might have two staff one day, different two the next day. When it's a murder, they allot two to you.
Mm.
And the two that was allotted to me went, "Linda, you definitely didn't do it. You're definitely going home."
So after your QC's got a bottle of champagne, he's going, "Look, it's there in his briefcase. You are walking. You're not going to get found guilty for this."
But what happened, and I believe this is the turning point and why I did get a guilty, the trial had ended. The jury had gone out. I'd been out a whole day. They come back, they had a question.
It wasn't just you, it was also Danny was on trial as well.
Yeah. They come back, they had a question. So the judge went, jury's coming back, they've got a question. Well, the question was, if Linda Calvey was where she said she was in the kitchen, would she have seen what she said she saw from the gun? Which I said, when the gun got fired, there was this hazy red puff come out with grey, and it was there, and then it went.
Flash.
Yeah. So I'd said, that's what I saw, and that is what I saw. So they said, if Linda Calvey was where she was, would she have seen what she said? So they said, well, we can't answer that. We'll have to get a gun expert. And the head of the murder squad stood up and went, oh, luckily we've got our expert in the building. He can answer that. And he blatantly lied.
Well, he said that you couldn't have seen what you could have seen had you been in the position.
And
that
an
you
hour
said
later,
you were
they in. Come back with a guilty.
So they pulled the jury back out from deliberation to get that expert?
Yes. Because the jury had asked that question.
Oh, right.
So they said, we're getting the gun expert, the police gun expert, who will be coming back. We will ask that question. And as soon as they said to him, "If this is the diagram, she was here, this was there. If she was there, is that what she'd have seen?" And he said, no, she wouldn't.
But that piece of evidence.
But that was a lie. He blatantly lied.
That statement changed your life.
Yes, it did. And I straight away wrote on a bit of paper and sent it across to my QC and said he's blatantly lied. And he sent back on a bit of paper, we all know he has. He's not a witness we can't cross-examine. And an hour later, they come back with a guilty.
So they can't, they could, why could they not cross-examine him?
Because he was not a witness.
He was a so-called expert.
He was an expert just answering a question. But I said straight away.
The question would have been asked by the prosecuting counsel, surely? The question must have said to him, could she see this? No, because it was asked by the jury.
Yes, it was asked by the jury. So when he came in, the judge said, this is the question that the jury have asked for the answer of. Well, obviously, they've said to him, well, you can't say yeah. So he said, no, she wouldn't have seen it. And I did.
So you found guilty.
And I got found guilty.
You found guilty. And what sentence were you given?
The judge, I mean, I was then expecting this real tirade of abuse from the judge because of what I got for the 7 years. So I thought, God, I've just been found guilty of murder. And instead, it was horrible. It was really surreal. He put the black cap on.
He puts the black cap on his head.
But then he put his arms out and he went, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. All I can do is refer you in front of this jury to the full Court of Appeal. He said, do you understand what that means? And I went, no. And he went, it means you leave this dock an appellant. And I sentenced 7 years. That's all I can do. And I was charged with gangland, which should have started at 24. And then I did the 7 years, and then I got 8 years added on by Michael Howard.
Why did that happen? So you did the full 7 years.
Yeah.
So you went to the Court of Appeal, and that didn't...
We went to the Court of Appeal, and they said they felt there were concerns, but there was no fresh evidence. So without fresh evidence, there was nothing they could do.
So still that statement that was made to that jury by the expert, that was the thing that got you 7 years, and in turn, another eight top up. So
and
15.
Then after that, I still got longer because all the years I was in, I said, I never did this. Never did it. I will never say I did it.
So how many years did you serve?
18.
For the death of a man that was effectively, had ruined a lot of your life.
Yeah.
Who threatened to kill your son.
Yeah.
Who had effectively killed Mickey.
Yeah.
So there was lots of reasons why you'd want that man dead, but you swear to
I never
this
did
day,
it, no.
And you actually did extra time on the basis that you didn't do it.
Yeah. I could have come home years ago if I'd have said I'd done it. I was even told in prison, Linda, can't you just say it? We can then process you and get you home.
What made you stick to your guns?
Because I never did it.
Stick to your guns is the worst. What made you stick to your guns? Oh, I didn't do it, Ross. I didn't have a gun.
Yes, I didn't do it. No, but I couldn't say it. I had to be true to me. And I could not say that I did it because I didn't.
But even though okay, you've had a few tough moments in your life.
Mm-hmm.
This is about people's toughest moments. Was that when you were handed 7 or when you got another 5 on top? When your husband died? What was the toughest moment for you? What's
when
been the
my daughter got married, my only daughter, and she had a huge big wedding. She put it off for 3 years. And in the end, I said, don't keep putting it off. You have your wedding. And all my family was there. There was about 200 people.
Why wouldn't they release you just to go to the wedding?
Well, loads of the staff all said, we'll take Linda. Let her just go to the church. And they said, no, Home Office said she can't go.
Was this during the first 7 or after they added 5?
They added 5. Yeah. So that was my worst moment.
How did you feel the day of that wedding?
I was heartbroken. That my daughter, I mean, when my daughter was born, I suppose all mothers go, oh, you'll be a lovely bride. Mm. And the day my daughter got married, I didn't even see her. I had to wait for wedding photos to come.
And what was that like?
It was heartbreaking. Really heartbreaking. And that was my worst moment.
Of all the things that you've been through, isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it? Not being there.
Yeah.
At what point did you get the title of the Black Widow?
I was given the title of the Black Widow when Mickey was shot dead.
Oh, right.
By
the police?
Yes. Because when Mickey died, I wore black for 6 months. And because...
Even though Ron was courting you, or trying to get... He wasn't courting you, he was trying to get...
I wore black. And I was called the Black Widow in the papers. The police called me the Black Widow. And in the beginning... I used to think, do you know what? I don't really like this. It's not a. It's a bit of a derogatory title.
But also because it can mean a widow that wears black, or it can be a spider that kills people. Yeah.
But in the end, since I've started doing my book,
you can kill a poisonous spider. Let's put it that way.
I mean, now I do my book, and I'm doing my new books, and people say, oh, "Will you sign my book for me?" I go, "Yeah," and I put best wishes, Linda Calvey, and I draw a little spider, and I think,
you know,
tongue in cheek. I don't take myself too seriously, so I can laugh at it.
Yeah. What was prison like? All those years? All those different prisons? How many times did you get moved? You got to know Holloway quite well.
I think I've been in every female prison going.
I've been very briefly for like 3 hours in Holloway once. I won't go into details of why I was in there or how well I was received, which I have to say was very well. But... what's a female prison like? It's different, isn't it? Women are different to men.
Yeah.
Whatever way you put that.
They're tough.
That's not being sexist.
No,
all
they
prisons
are tough. Yeah,
but
they're all tough.
People say, a lot of warders I know, male ones, don't like working in female prisons.
No, because women always hold grudges. If a man has a row with a man, 9 times out of 10, it'll get resolved. They'll go, all right, shake my hand.
For a peaceful life.
Yeah, we're all in here together. You crack on your life and I'll crack on with mine. Mm. Women don't. They plot and plan. What's the next thing they're going to do?
Really?
And there's a hell of a lot of bullying in women's prisons. A hell of a lot, especially with the youngsters.
Yeah.
And there's loads of drugs, as there is in men's.
Mm.
And that is awful.
Did you see that happen? I mean, you grew up in an East End where there weren't any drugs.
No.
Well, now the whole country's flooded with the things.
How naive was I? When I went to prison, I always presumed everybody had a mum and a dad and a normal life.
Mm.
And the harsh reality, you know, from going into prisons, that's not the reality. Mm. The people in prisons have come from broken homes.
Abusive.
Parents.
They've got parents.
Yeah. Yeah. They are
care. A lot of people from care go straight into.
Whereas I just couldn't believe it when I was. Oh yeah, my mum and my dad. They went, did you live with your mum and dad? Yeah, of course I did. And it was like God. It was so sad.
How were you treated by the prisoners? I mean,
well, the funny thing was, I suppose the nickname I was given probably carried me in good stead, because when I
do people want to mess with you, Linda?
No, and it's not because I'm this big tough girl that can fight, because I don't fight and whatever, but I think my reputation preceded me, and for a change, it did me good that my reputation did, because when I went into Holloway. And the day I got the 7 years, the warden that came up and stood next to me in the box, when he said 7 years, she went, fucking hell. That's the biggest sentence in the prison. Because going back in those days, people didn't get big sentences. So 7 years, I had the biggest sentence in Holloway. And when we went downstairs, the other screw was sitting knitting. And she went, she's just got 7 years. And she went, no, how is she going to do that? Mm. I said, I'll do it because I did the crime. Don't want to do it.
But that's your first crime.
That was my first one.
But you bumped into Myra Hindley. You say that you weren't physical. You said that you weren't, but you gave her a slap, didn't you?
Yeah, I just saw red. I mean, I think I was put in the... this was in Cookham. I'd been away over a year. I'd worked my way from Holloway to go to Cookham. And when I got there, they said...
This is on your first sentence?
On my first sentence.
But you were about to meet her again on your second sentence?
Yes,
well.
Twice. Going,
so you see her?
Yeah, so they said, well, we're giving you the job as a librarian. So I said, but I don't read. I read newspapers, I don't read books. Well, you're getting the job as a librarian because you look like you could be a librarian. So I got the job, and right next door to the library was the laundry where Myra worked on her own. And there was black and yellow tape across, don't cross this line, you get put on report, blah, blah.
If you associate with her?
Well, if you even step across the line, because that was a bit where she was at her little sanctuary. And the screw come in and said, you can take your washing in if you want before all the factory comes out, so you can get your washing put in first. So I walked in and she was getting laundry out and she was singing to a song. And I just saw red and just walked up and thought, how can you sing when you've killed those children? I just walked up and slapped her, and she looked at me and rubbed her face and went to me, I could get you put back in Holloway for that. And I went, Holloway doesn't hold any fears for me. And I just walked back into the library and thought, oh, bloody hell, I'm going to end up back in Holloway now. She didn't say anything. The next day, they came in, one staff, and went, Myra has her coffee in here, her coffee break. So whether she'd said anything or not, but she came and she went, so you do know she comes in here. I said, well, if she comes in here, she comes in here, doesn't she? And that was it. And that incident went by. But that was the first time I ever saw her.
Wasn't the last time, though?
No. I was in two other prisons after that. Durham and also Newhall. When she was dying.
There were some... Durham was a prison for some pretty awful, awful people.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. A lot of sex offenders, a lot of paedophiles, yeah.
I never knew women were paedophiles until I went to prison either. I think I must have been really naive.
Did you find it difficult because of where you'd come from, having to associate... I think it was the governor at Durham that says, don't judge people by the crime.
Yeah.
Judge them by the way that you find
I was so angry that... They said to me, I had to go there. I said, I don't want to go there with all them nonces. And when I got there, I saw the governor, who was lovely, Mr. Smith. And I'm ranting and raving. I don't want to be here. I shouldn't be here with all these people. And he said, look, unfortunately, you are here and you're going to be here for quite a while. All I can do is give you the advice I gave myself. Switch off from what these people are in for. And just take them on face value, because otherwise you won't talk to a soul in here. And that is what you had to do, unfortunately.
You said bullying was rough. Did anyone ever try and bully you?
No, never.
I wouldn't.
No, nobody ever tried
you
saw, to bully
you, but
me.
You stepped in a couple of times. I mean, yeah. With Rose West.
I mean,
West.
I hate...
Rose West wanted some, was it, some elephants made, and the girls had filled it with needles?
This was in Durham, and she'd had... two fluffy elephants made in the workshop for two babies, two, I don't know if they were her grandchildren, I think. And the girls had put pins in them. And when I went in to pick them up, they went, oh, don't squeeze them too hardly. And I went, why? They went, they've got loads of pins in. I went, you can't do that. They're for babies. And they went, like this. I said, don't matter. I'll go and, I went in and see the lady who ran the workshop. And I said, I think these have got to be restuffed. And she went, oh, I should have guessed. I should have stuffed them myself. So they got restuffed and they were taken out.
It's not the children's
out.
Fault, is it?
No, it's not.
I had to stop reading some of the stuff that her and her husband got up to. How did you feel being in her company?
Well, I think she's mad. I think she is absolutely just a mad person. Where Myra, I think, was an evil person, and she had an aura around her of like a sinister aura. Rose, I think, was just as nutty as a fruitcake.
Mm. But still hurt a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. I mean, she had to be mad to do what she did with her own children. But they're very different.
But any at this point, you could have put your hands up and said, even though you didn't do it, I did this. I could have gone home
years ago, years before. And I said, look, one thing I'm not is stupid. I'm not stupid. I'm quite an intelligent person. If I'm still sitting here saying I didn't do it, knowing that I'm not going to go home, don't you think somebody ought to sit and look and go, do you know what, maybe there's something in it? And it was only, I don't know who changed the rules, whether it was the prison service, the Home Office, the government, whoever. They changed it that you didn't have to say you committed the crime to go home. And that is the only reason that I did get set free.
And eventually you met someone with a red Rolls Royce?
I did. Bless him. And yeah, I met him in a restaurant.
Well, you were still on release, weren't you?
I was day released, going out. I was in the open prison and you could go out every Sunday. And at that time, you had to be collected. You couldn't just go off. Mm. So I usually, one of my family used to come and get me or whatever. But this week, gone to a restaurant with some of my friends and we were waiting for a table and he was with his friend waiting for a table and we started chatting. And I don't know, we got so chatty, but he said to me, oh, blah, 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 are you married? I said, no, I've been divorced and of my first husband died and my second husband I divorced.
Yeah, your second husband, we should admit, it was Danny, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Why did you marry Danny?
God
knows. You never even knew him properly.
No, I didn't.
And he shot, is it because he shot Ron?
I don't know. I don't know why I did.
So Danny's in a prison miles away from you. You're in a prison miles away from him.
Yeah.
And you decide to get married. And also, you've turned down Reggie Cray.
Yeah.
Who's also asked you to marry you. And Mr. Bronson,
yeah.
Charles Bronson.
Nutty Bronson, yeah, bless him.
Did he actually not kidnap a governor and some staff just so he could have a phone conversation with you?
Yeah.
And said,
me in Holloway and said, Linda, tell him you don't want hostage today.
Sorry, can I just ask this, Linda? Yeah. Just on a basis, we've been talking about how intelligent you are. You've made some very interesting decisions when it comes to men, may I say?
Yeah, it wasn't intelligent there, was I?
but Danny, you said yes to. I mean,
and then we both said, "What on earth? Why have we done this?" And I said to the girls, "No, we're not going to get married." And they was all upset and went, "Please get married. It's the most exciting thing any of us have ever had for years." So we married to keep the girls happy in Durham. I mean, what a mad reason to get married.
And then you got divorced from
him. And then got divorced.
And also, just to clear this up, Ron's dead. Brian was doing a very long sentence. You sort of stopped contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He sort of dropped off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Then you marry
Danny. Yeah.
Then you divorce Danny.
Yeah.
Then you go on day release and then you meet George.
George.
And George, one of the things you say to him is, I can't go out with you.
He said, I'm divorced. Could I take you out? I said, yes, but you can take me out next Sunday. So what about in the week? I said, no, I can only go out on Sundays. And he said, why is that? I said, because I'm in prison. And he laughed and said, no, why can't you really go out? I said, because I'm in prison. And he said, well, how are you out then if you're in prison? And I said, no, I'm in open prison. And I can go out on a Sunday. So he said, well, can I take you out next Sunday? So I said, yes. And I told him where the prison was and what time. And he said, great, really looking forward to it. Now, East Sutton Park is a manor, and all the girls can look out, and you can see everybody turning up at the gate. There's no gates around. You pull up the drive and you park, and you just come and knock on the door and say, I've come to collect whoever. And everybody had gone, and I was still standing there, and I thought, oh, he's changed his mind. I feel really embarrassed. So I said to one of the girls, I'm going upstairs. If anyone pulls up, will you call me? And I'd been upstairs about 5 minutes, and she shouted out, Lynn, has he got a red roller? And I went, what? And when I come down the stairs, he was outside the car going, waving.
And he owned it.
And he owned it.
It was his.
And it was his. And I told him the story.
Did you find it hard to actually work out that he actually got that by legitimate means?
I mean,
he was the first guy to put bleach into plastic bottles, wasn't he? Is that right?
Yeah.
And he fell in love with you?
Yeah.
And like I so said, many have.
And I said to him, do you know what? You're not going to believe this. When I was 10, blah, 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 blah. I said, and I've had so many cars. I've had Mercedes and Porsche and whatever, but I never had a Rolls Royce. He said, well, you've got one now, and it's the red one. And that was that was it. And then I married George. And then he died. He died of cancer.
So when you look back now, Linda.
Yes.
From that first moment when you looked into Mickey's eyes, maybe. Yeah. All those highs, all those parties, yeah. Getting the money out, shaking it on the bed, on the table.
Yeah.
But then all those lows of not seeing your kids, seeing the man that bullied you, shot in front of you, all the things that you've seen, all those people that you've met, all those years. And we know all the money in the world can't buy you time.
No.
When you look back on it, does crime pay?
No, it doesn't pay. But you can't regret either, because to regret is a pointless thing that just eats you up.
And when you look on it...
And I look back and think, if I could change my life, how far back would I go to change it? And I can't go back past having my son and daughter, because they're my world. Mm. So if I can't go past there, then I start with Mickey again. Mm. So I would have to go through life.
So would you live the same life that you've lived?
Not if I could turn back, no. If I could have my children and a totally different life.
Yeah.
But we can't change anything.
The world doesn't work like that.
No. So now I just hope that from now I can, from a big, big negative, I've now got a positive where I have now got a new career and I am on my new books. Mm. And hopefully things will really flourish and turn around for me.
I hope they do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Kempcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review. You can find me on Twitter at Ross Kemp and on Instagram at Ross Kemp TV. This has been a Freshwater and the Chancer Collective production. Thanks to the team and One Fine Play. And until the next episode, goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.